ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley. Welcome to the Givenish Spotlight Hour. We're here on WWDB Talk 860. We've got a fantastic show. Our co-host for the broadcast is Peggy Jansen of Givenish. How are you, Peggy?
Great to be here. Thank you, Joe.
It's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to be here. And we've done some incredibly impactful shows. Today is no exception. So much that we talk about with our guest, it has to do with supporting individuals who are in difficult times, and providing services and opportunities, to make those times easier. And so, I'd like to take the pleasure to welcome Marcy Shankweiler. She is the founder and CEO of For Pete's Sake. It's a cancer respite foundation. How are you, Marcy?
Good to see you, Joe. Doing well, thank you.
It's my pleasure. Certainly, as we start off, I'd like to kind of ask you to, kind of introduce yourself, a little bit about yourself for the audience.
Sure. So I actually am the oldest of nine siblings.
With
a beautiful family. Grew up in the bakery business down in Seattle City, New Jersey. So we all worked hard together.
Awesome.
It is a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, I've often thought about if I owned a bakery, what the heck would happen? I wouldn't be able to sit in this chair, that's for damn sure, but yes.
Well, we always joke that my parents had nine kids because it was free labor.
So. That's great.
I'm married, my husband, Mark, and I have two children, Mar and Rose. Locally, grew up in Doylestown from North Wales now, and lucky now to run for Pete's Sake Cancer Respite Foundation.
Awesome. It's fantastic to have you on the broadcast. And Peggy, we were talking a little bit before the broadcast, and one of the things that we have done and what Givenish does, the whole organization is, with the broadcast is to kind of bring on guests where there's a synergy with your organization.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. This is no exception.
No.
Obviously, give our listeners, anybody who's hiding under a rock on a desert island, that doesn't know.
Don't know about Life Celebration by Givenish, the Givenish family, our founder, John Givenish himself, we really are a group of like-minded individuals who obviously our living run funeral services, but we're really so much more than that, in that John has instilled in us, and I think he and Dan Selecki and Chris Selecki, they really handpicked the people that they feel will represent the company well in community outreach and partnering with like-minded people. Because if you know anything about the people that are in the organization, and Joe, you've had the privilege to meet many of them, they are not doing this just as a career. It really is a calling. It really is a 24/7 operation where, even if they're not at work here, we're always doing something out in the community, which brings us back to For Pete's Sake. If my face is a little green, I apologize, but when I meet people like you, I mean, not to get all corny and everything, but like, I am in awe, because I am one of five, the middle neglected child. And no, I'm kidding, you'd think I'm the oldest, but we talked a little bit about this before the show, Marcy, in that in the old days, everyone just had kind of a different mindset, that if someone needed to pick me up or needed help with something, you did a block collection, you made a cake, you took over dinner. And I feel like because life's gotten so busy for whatever reason, two people, working household or whatever, everything's kind of got disconnected a little bit. So every time I see someone like yourself who reminds people that, yeah, we're all busy, trust me. I have three children, three grandchildren, network of friends and whatnot. But it's not about having the time, it's about making the time. And you're a perfect example. I know, you are a busy woman, but somehow you're doing what you're doing. So that is why Joe and I felt that you'd be a great guest to bring on to show what you do. And we want to share more about what Pete's Sake is all about.
Well, thank you. And you really hit the nail on the head. Time is our most precious piece of life, and we really take it for granted, and coupled with time is connection with other people. We weren't meant to go through life alone. And For Pete's Sake really brings both of those pieces together, giving families and giving cancer patients community to spend time together, really to refresh, reconnect, and really focus on family health. You know, I mean, we need each other going through the journey of life. And when you get a diagnosis of cancer, which is what we really focus on, you recognize that the gift of community is really what propels you forward in that journey.
Well, you're going to make me cry again. Now my face is green and I'm
crying. That was me last month, so yeah, I don't feel that bad.
We made him cry.
I can't get through
that. We made him cry. But, you know, having, and I don't think there's probably anyone who hasn't been touched by someone who has cancer or knows someone who has cancer. And to that note, you're exactly right. It's one person who may be diagnosed with it, but if you know anything about it, the whole family, the whole community of people that surrounds them is touched because things change, you know. There's things that have to be done and plans that have to be made, and that's when you need your network of family and friends support the most. And you can't change, if I understand correctly, you can't change their diagnosis that they have cancer, but you can sure make the journey a little bit lighter by what you do. And what do you do?
Yeah, so just, you know, just to give you some background, and, you know, this is a, you know, the Givnish family is so ingrained in our, you know, Philadelphia and kind of area here. We started really as a small nonprofit, and this was really not my vision. So I was, my first husband, Pete, who is really the founder of the organization, when he was 29, he was diagnosed with a really very rare aggressive form of cancer. And during our journey, you know, in true Philadelphia style, our friends had a beef and beer, and we took the funds from that beef and beer and were able to go away. It was not my idea to go away. I wanted to pay the mortgage, but my husband, Pete at the time, said, you know, Marcy, like, this is probably going to be it, and you don't know what I need, and I don't know what you need, but I think we need this together. So we actually did have a chance to travel for about 2 weeks. And we came home and he passed away, you know, shortly thereafter. And it was that really experience that really set us down on this course. And after he died, you know, I'm sitting here in a funeral, you know, funeral home in a sense, but I was sitting there in the funeral home and my husband told me to put it in his obituary. And I remember turning to my mom saying, should I do that? Like, should I put this in his obituary notice? Not knowing where that would lead. And I did. I was a tax attorney at the time, so I called my friend and said, listen, can you file some incorporation papers? And he did, one of my attorney friends in Doylestown, Tom. And even just how it all happened in the very beginning, just to come together.
But what did they put in the obituary then?
To leave donations to
For
Pete's Sake, a nonprofit that was Pete's vision.
So even on his dying, like, see, I'm going to cry now, you know what I'm saying?
Really,
but so even in his final hours, his final days, he wasn't about, you know, woe is me, this is it for me. It was about how can I help other people? Like, see, that just, that mindset just, like, I wish everyone could feel like that.
Well, the inspiration, like, for, you know, for the foundation, and it's very unique. What is respite care? And it's spelled, and it said respite, right?
Is respite, that, right.
Yeah.
So it's For Pete's Sake Cancer Respite Foundation. So respite is defined as a break from a normal routine to really reconnect, refresh, and rejuvenate. So it really is removing yourself from, like, what the situation has become. So in the case of a cancer patient, especially, you know, we really focus on young adult cancer patients. So we're not children focused, and we don't deal with older adults. But the average age of the person we help is in their mid-30s.
So they're in the prime of their life.
They are in the prime of their life. Unexpected diagnosis. I mean, you literally get a test done. You're driving down the road to go to work. Your doctor calls and says, you know what? Don't go straight to your office. Take a left and come to my office. And you find out that you have cancer. Like, that's how it happens at that age. And it's so, like, overwhelming, because in one instant, your life changes. And you have so many different variables that are going on with, you know, you could be single, living by yourself. You could have small children. You could have just been married, like Pete and I. Like, so you know, you were really in the prime of your life. And then once that diagnosis happens and you start, you know, going down the road of treatment and hospital visits and tests, and you literally are on the edge every single day of what your body is telling you. And it's, you know, when you're living it, it is encompassing. So what we do is we come in as an organization and we say, listen, we're going to give you the gift of time away. You know, some people forget about cancer and some don't, you know, but what happens during that time is magical, you know, and it helps people be able to cope with their diagnosis. It helps them be able to communicate about their diagnosis, and it helps them to be able to return, you know, to their treatment protocol, renewed, you know, and strengthened by this experience.
What's interesting about, you know, I was reading, obviously, on the website, and there's almost no way. And it reminds me of a previous guest who had a created a nonprofit for those in the NICU.
It's a good day.
Okay, Martin, there's no way you could actually come up with even the concept unless you experienced what you experienced. Tell us a little bit more about Pete, because he inspired this. You know, this is his inspiration. I read a little about the fact that you just went away. It rejuvenated you to be able to continue the fight, and wanting to pay that forward and to be able to help other people in those situations. Talk about how he inspired you and those conversations.
You know, ironically, I don't think anyone's ever asked me that question in a long time.
Well, Peggy told me to
there
ask
we
it.
Go. Peggy, good job. You know, so I think when we first had the beef and beer and they handed us that money, you know, the conversation, you know, I'm a caregiver, pizza patient, right? He's facing his own mortality at 29. I'm just figuring out how I'm going to be able to support him. And I'm not even thinking about the future. Really, I mean, and you know, we had that chance to go away. And the most I can remember the most profound moment during that. And like, you know, I get a little teary-eyed when I think Please. About it. But we were sitting there on the beach and no words were spoken. There were no words. Just a touch of a hand. And we knew, like, you see, like, I go back and I'm like, you know, the tears were coming down my face and his face. No words. Silence. Sometimes it's the most powerful tool.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
right? And he was silent at that moment, but we both knew the unspoken journey that was going to transpire. And then when he came home, you know, he said, Marcy, there's nothing out there for young adults. There's nothing that focuses on patient, caregiver, and family. And really, even just extended family, like our parents were happy we could do this. My siblings were happy. I mean, you know, this was a community coming together to give something to somebody. You know, Peggy talked about paying it forward. Like, this is how this is what we did. And he just said, you know what, this is our chance to help people, like, who don't have that help, who don't have any resources.
But again, and let's that's do it. So awesome. Because, well, yeah. You know, again,
in his time of struggling.
His struggle, he really was focusing on, and I know we sitting at this table have the same mindset that if people only realize the best way to forget your own troubles is to worry about someone else's. And that is so true. I have to give a shout out. Sorry. I mean, I work
Please.
Forgiveness, obviously. I owe my life to them. But I am part of a great group of people from Our Lady of Peace Parish in Millmont Park, Our Lady of Peace Parish. And when I bring that to your attention, it's because, Marcy, you and I talked before the show about, you know, when someone's going through a rough time, that's a community. I've now moved away. I'm in a different area. But if something were to happen to me today, I know for a fact that that core group of people would start a chain. Peggy's in trouble. You know, let's send meals. Let's do a food chain. And that's the mindset that I wish everyone could get again, because, you know, again, the show's not about me. It's about For Pete's Sake, and we're going to focus on that. But my job is with Givenish, but on the side for the last 18 years, I've done something called Peggy's Pampering. It's not a big nonprofit. It's just a nice lady doing some good. And basically, I see men, women, and children in need of a pick-me-up. The reason I bring that to your attention is, just like For Pete's Sake, I don't claim to take away the fact somebody just got divorced or lost their job or lost a family member or a pet. But for a minute, I just want to remind them that people do care and that they're not alone. And again, circling back around to For Pete's Sake, what a wonderful gift your husband, Pete, left as his legacy, that he recognized the need for this program and made it happen. And kudos to you, because, hey, I can tell you, I mean, we hear people's dying wish all the time, but it doesn't mean that people follow through with it. So in other words, Pete might have told you this was what he wanted his legacy to be, but you, Marcy, like, are seeing it through. You know what I mean?
Well, I hope he's up there. At least, I mean, he can.
Oh, he's smiling.
I hope he smiled a little bit about it.
Sure he is.
But, you know, I think, you know, and it, you, Joe had asked about Pete. Like, so, you know, he passed away September 1st, but really in June, July, and August. And I think it's a transformational experience to love someone through that process, the dying process. I mean, what a gift. As painful as it can be, it is a gift when you're able to look back and know that you... You know what unconditional love is, and from all angles. And I think that it was like, he said, like, in July, like, I want to build a center where families come together. You know, I want to call it Peter's Homes. I mean, he was like, go.
He had a game plan.
I mean, he had a game plan. Really, like, he's sketching it out on a game plan, and he's given us these, you know, put four units together, a little pool in between. Like, we got to bring people together who are not alone and make sure that they feel loved during that journey.
And what's interesting about that is, Peggy, like, kind of just said that the best way to kind of, you know, lose your own problems is to think about other people. That's what he was doing. He was focusing on the positive and making a difference, and his legacy lives on every day. I can, you know, at my age at this point, you know, I've been married since 1985, right? And so... man, we went through some, as we all, you know, rough patches, and we, you know, we were kids when we got married and all those things. And, but as you kind of go through the stages of life, that companionship and, you know, believe me, I'm the best husband I have ever been in my life at my age right now. Right. So talking about that touch, and I don't know if it's a midlife crisis or whatever, but you get to this point, you wake up one day, you're 58 years old, and then you think about the person you love. And, you know, things enter your mind that never entered it before. And so...
But to be that young and have that mindset, that, well, you know, in your late 20s,
Absolutely. But that touch you were talking about, you know, I mean, that, you know, that is so relatable and so inspiring. To Peggy's point... great ideas, awesome. I mean, a visionary concept for somebody who was in that struggle at that point in time, but you were able to make it happen. And by the way, I researched the organization, incredibly, the website alone, if nothing was true, was incredible.
Whoever did that did a good job.
Well, what I'm saying is that you've done an incredible job. Talk about that. I know you're an attorney and you're very capable. And by the way, as you're the oldest of nine kids?
I am.
Yeah, you're the boss. Mm-hmm. So, but talk about how you did.
My brothers and sisters would say that too.
There you go.
No. You know, so really, I think it's really surrounding yourself with, like, amazing people and entrusting them, you know, with your vision. And at this point, it was like Pete entrusted me. And then, you know, I was fortunate enough to, you know, meet people who saw it, who felt it, who experienced cancer themselves and said, listen, I want to help. And so while I might be the leader for Pete's sake, you know, I got an engine of people behind me that are absolutely incredible, dedicated, compassionate, generous, kind, you know, and, you know, we read so much about bad people in the world. Well, I'll tell you what, good people surround me every single day. And that is, like, that's the other gift of, for Pete's sake.
How many people are the core group that surround you on a daily basis?
I mean, I have colleagues, about 10 colleagues who work there, but I have an incredible board. You know, I have
hundreds of volunteers. How'd you put the board together?
Oh, boy, that's a whole story. The first board was, like, really quick. You know, we're probably on our fifth board, like, fifth type of cycle board.
Yeah.
Our first board was just people who knew Pete's vision, you know, and knew Pete. You know, now I have a board that, you know, only one really knew Pete. So it's such a transition, because I think the organization has gone from Pete to young adult cancer patients. Like, you know, Pete was the propelled us down this journey, but every single day we talk to families who need our help. You know, and it's and there's thousands of them. I mean, that's we're the only nonprofit in the country that really focuses on respite and family health and getting outcomes that we want. You know, I was a math major in college, so I think I always loved data too. So I've been really collecting a lot of data, you know, on looking how we can best meet family needs, and looking at like their communication skills, their coping skills, you know, physical ambulation during cancer, you know, eating healthy, emotional help, you know, journaling. There's so many, you know, mindfulness, yoga. And I think you're seeing this, you know, cancer is being treated more holistically now than it was 20 years ago when Pete was going through it, which is wonderful. And we're trying to taking all those elements and putting it into the respite experience, and giving people this gift of time and helping them utilize that time to really like focus on what they need, like as a family together in that moment.
You mentioned that a lot of younger cancer patients are part of the organization. Is that because obviously when somebody gets into that, you know, gets a diagnosis like that, that the community support and wanting to be a part of people that are looking forward. In other words, they want to be a part of something that, you know, that also supports their needs also.
Well, I think part of it too is that, you know, and when you look at like how we allocate resources for cancer, there's a lot for research, and that's most certainly necessary, saves people's lives. I mean, and we need to keep doing that. And then you look at there's a lot of resources that are focused to children, but there's this group out there like in their 30s that honestly, like, they're under financial duress, they're under emotional duress, they're under mental duress, they're two working families, one stops working, you know, they are completely overwhelmed, and cancer can change the direction of their life, period. Right? I mean, there is no ifs, ands, or buts at that minute that diagnosis came through that how they're going to live the rest of their life is profoundly and forever changed. And, you know, that's, I mean, it's hard to cap, you know, to explain to someone who's healthy, right, let alone not. So, you know, we really come in and we really offer like an amazing community of support. We have a group called the Carry On Club of people who've passed away and that still are involved in For Pete's Sake. We have kids helping kids. And we're really like focusing on respite in with other families. So, you know, we used to own homes in Florida and send people. And then, you know, COVID was an exclamation point to a direction we were going. And now we really focus on providing respite with groups of families at one time. And looking at how we're going to be able to take those families who walk in as strangers and organically leave as forever friends.
I mean, it's you know, moving and impactful, but at the same time, you know, exactly what I, you know, people who can relate to the people that have been through it. I guess, you know, having said that, there's two, I was doing a little research to find the two forms of cancer respite programs and kind of take us through the respite program step by step in regards to what people experience.
Okay. So we have two respite programs. We have a travel respite program and a staycation respite. Travel respite is you have to be nominated by a member of your oncology team for that. And we essentially work with Woodlock up in Hawley, PA. And we plan everything for a family. And we allow them to go up there for a six-day stay, five nights. Wow. And we do everything for them. Like, there's nothing that they don't do. We give them journals. We have children write cards to other children. We do backpack buddies where the kids get something special, the caregiver gets something special, the patient gets something special. And we have groups of 10 to 12 families come together at one time. We do some programming while we're up there, but minimal, but enough that they're able to start addressing some of those family health issues that, you know, go across the board. So, you know, these families come, and, you know, even just sitting down for a meal twice a day where you don't have to cook and clean the dishes, like for women who have late stage breast cancer, because many people we help are late stage cancers, that in itself provides an experience that really is unspeakable about because it is so profound. I've watched moms, you know, whose kids order hot chocolate for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, and all you see is a smile on her face, you know, and then 3 months later, she's not there. So it's really, you know, the respite experience is different for every person. It's going to be a different experience for the patient, for the caregiver, and the child. But I think what we walk away with knowing that collectively, their own experiences are going to make their continued journey with this disease, more hopeful, more joyful, you know, and ultimately more impactful.
Well, and like you said, and I'm sorry that you had to experience it to really be able to know what families need, but when we talked about that moment when you and Pete were away and it was just that touch and no words were even spoken, that showed you how powerful, you know, a time away can really be for a family. So now you know firsthand how, you know, how much good you're doing by providing the service. A quick question I had was, well, not really even a question, kind of an observation, but Pete, he, I believe, not only had this mindset to have this vision to help other people, but I feel like he was trying to help you, his wife, and his family by focusing more on the future of doing good rather than what was really happening, which was that you were losing him.
Right.
You know?
No, I think you're right. I mean, that's what a lot of people, like a lot of my friends and his, you know, even his family, his mom always says that to me. Like, if he set you up, Marcy, you know, and it is funny. Like, he did, you know, interestingly enough, he did a list of 100 things to do in life when he knew how severe his cancer was. And sometimes it's like, you know, spend more time with my dad. You know, because he's getting older and I don't know how much time I'm going to have
simple
with him.
Things, yeah.
So many simple things. But his last, you know, 5 statements were never give up. And I think that was, you know, never give up doesn't mean that, you know, you're failing if you die. It doesn't. It means dying well, mm-hmm. you know, and never giving up in that process of always making the most of every single day, the time that you have, the people that you have, and loving him as much as you can. So that was, you know, I you know, he did set me up and, you know, here we are years later. So, but you work forgiveness, and I got it. Like, this is like such a funny story too, because, you know, I was an attorney, right? I didn't know how to run a nonprofit. You know, I'm trying to start a nonprofit and I don't even know how to ask people for anything. Well, my phone rings one day and it's Jerry Givnish. And Jerry met a woman who was helping out with an event on the treadmill after getting knee rehab, and she was telling him what she was doing, and it was Jerry on the other line after learning about this at physical therapy, and he says, "Hey, my name's Jerry Givnish. I heard about your story. Can I come into your office and can we talk?" Well, first of all, no one ever called me. Like it was just like at that point, you know, I was like, "Wow, someone's actually calling."
That's incredible. You know? Mm-hmm. Did you know that?
Probably not. And he comes in, then he calls me and says, "We'd like to bring lunch." I was like, "Wow.
Yeah, you're in." Yeah.
And Jerry walked in our door, and that was like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I just saw him recently, and I said, you know, I remember that moment, and I remember that phone call. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, it goes to your point, like life is about memorable moments. You know, we create them on respite, but we also have them throughout our own life that we just have to open up our eyes to be able to see.
It's true. It's a shame that it takes times like what you went through with Pete and everything to really, and I know you mean it, like to just focus more on time and making memories with people. You know, my biggest regret is, you know, again, I'm one of 5 middle child, and my mom passed at 57 unexpectedly of a heart attack. And it's my worst memory because at the time, my husband and I was helping to run his business, and we had a couple of rental properties, and I had 3 little children. And, you know, I don't have to tell you how busy life was, but I ran over to see my mom for something, and her last words to me were, "You never have time for me." And I was like, "Mom, I'm sorry. I'm crazy busy. I'll see you tomorrow." She died that night of a heart attack. That rings so loud in my ears because would it really have killed me to just sit down for 10 more minutes and give her my time, you know? And it's a shame that it takes experiences like that. And I have to say, you know, it's part of why I do what I do now in my spare time, because when I talk to people, I really look at you. Like, you're not going to leave today and I'll be like, oh, that was cool. She was a good guest. You know, it's like, I really want to know all about you. I really, you know, am in all of what you do and, like, want to give you 100% of my time. And I just wish everyone could not have to go through a bad experience to get to that point in life. You know?
Well, Peggy, thanks for sharing that story. That's, you know, yeah. I mean,
I know I'm a bad daughter. But you, but, I just feel terrible.
Listen, the last time my father called, I was so tired, I couldn't pick it up.
See.
And, but the reason I don't beat myself up all that much on it is because I know my father wouldn't want me to. And I didn't know, and you didn't know that was going to happen.
No.
And that's a lot about human nature. But the point you both made, and you mentioned time.
Make the time.
Well, think about it for a second. I sometimes, you know, seeing the forest through the trees can be difficult, and life experiences are in many ways the only way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We're all busy and there's a lot of things. You sit there and I say to myself, well, you know, you can read about all kinds of people and their drive. A good example would be Tom Brady, right? Tom Brady, the quarterback. He's been in the league 25 years. He's done everything he possibly can. Now, he's got his own whatever makes him tick, but the point is the time he's not going to get with his kids back. Now, I'm not telling him what to do because you're only a NFL quarterback one time. But my point is
you're not going to get it back.
Your point about time being our most treasured asset and how valuable. Sometimes you don't realize that until you've already, you know, wasted it. Mm-hmm. And even if you wasted it on good things, who was it? I forget the guy's name. It wasn't the owner of Apple, but Microsoft, where the guy was worth billions and billions. He said, I could have made less money. He was dying and he knew it. You know what I mean? And so, the reason I say that is trying to balance your life with what's valuable and what's necessary. And so, you know, that the great point on time, because, you know, I'm in a sense, in a lot of ways, just trying to make up for lost time and saying, please, let's hurry up so I can enjoy this type of situation. You always look back. How does your husband now and your kids,
how are they supportive with it?
That's supportive. And is it an awkward? Yeah. I mean, obviously this is your previous husband, still incredibly inspirational, a massive part of your life. How does your obviously your new family, but how do they deal with it?
You know, they're like rock stars. And they're like, we actually have a saying in our house, they're voluntold to do everything. So whenever we need help, like my husband and my two kids are first ones there.
Awesome.
To pick up the slack. And
how old are the kids?
I have a sophomore at LaSalle University.
Oh, awesome.
And then I have a senior in high school.
Oh, how about
that?
So
they're a little older.
So you're not, you're not busy at all, right?
No, no. So I got remarried about 3 years, a little over 3 years after Pete died. So,
okay.
And you know, my Shank, well, we call him the current husband because they always joke around. I mean, we do joke about like funny things, like people would think it's a little odd, but we're like, hey, listen, you know, if I get Marcy, you're going to get remarried because that's your track record. So we kind of joke around, like,
sure.
You know, he's got a great sense of humor.
Oh, it's great.
But you know, he sees the impact. Like my kids, like, experience it and live it. Like, so what we do now is when we send groups of families away, we have facilitators that really accompany them too. And my kids and my husband have done that. So, you know, my daughter was 14 and she sat down and, you know, we have our patients do pottery. And she helped mom write notes on the bottom of pottery that she was going to leave for her kids.
I love that.
She was 14 years old.
I love that. You know, to that note, Marcy, I wish, you know, we're talking about we wish people would get the mindset of paying it forward and focusing on others, but it starts young. You know, I have to give a shout out to my grandchildren, Jansen, Brady, and Emerson, because they are 6, almost 4, and 1.5. And guess what? They help me with my vision in paying it forward. In fact, October we'll be painting some pumpkins pink for some women who have gone through and going through breast cancer, and we deliver little pink pumpkins to them. But my point is, teach them young. Teach them young. You know, about mm-hmm. paying it forward.
And I think the experience,
I think it's great
though,
your children are involved.
The experience, you really never feel better than when you help someone.
Yeah.
And you may not even realize it, but Giving back and doing that, and I know it's sometimes a cliche, but the reality is,
it always feel good.
It's a hell of a lot better, you know, giving than receiving.
It does,
except for those donuts over there. I gotta be honest with you.
I know, I'm lying about too.
But it's a great point. It's a great point.
And Marcy, do you find that, you know, I mean, it's been a great experience, obviously, for your children as well. But I just feel like, if we instill it in them young, then it just becomes second nature. Like, it's something that they just think that that's what you do. Someone's in trouble, you help them, right?
They do. And we started like a take a break club at their high school, and mm-hmm. now that like catches on. And,
by the way, that must be popular at the high school.
So the take a break clubs. Yeah. So, and they talk about like just family health and mental sure. health and emotional health and, you know, physical health, like collectively. And, my daughter's at LaSalle, and she and, you know, member, like Pete's fraternity is very active, and for Pete's sake, from LaSalle University. And my daughter and someone from the fraternity put together where we launched a cornhole for cancer concept during mm-hmm. COVID, because I said, no, we have to stay out and relevant. You know, what are we going to do? Like, our mission is so important. So, you know, we started cornhole because you could be outside. So now we have cornhole for cancer. And I was just up last night on Red Lion Road, you know, doing one with American Heritage Federal Credit Union. So, you know, it is about community. It's about caring, and it's about compassion.
Do you find that more and more companies, you know, the company lifestyle has changed? At least I know here at Givenish, you know, John has always embedded in us that, you know, it's not just what we can get from others, but what we can give back to the community. And to that note, you know, I don't know if you're aware, but we do like Halloween safety nights. We have a couple of them coming up, you know, in October. We do the tree lighting ceremony. So we are all about helping families before, after, and, you know, during the time of need. And to that note, meaning the companies now that you find out in the world, do you find that rather than just having like lunch and learns or whatever, do you find some companies ask you to come in and speak? And if so, how can they get in touch with you? And what do you feel the companies gain from your story? And do they then help to participate in some way and volunteer?
That's a great question. So we, you know, like in, you know, take Givenish, for example, like whenever we have events, they're the first ones to be able to say, okay, like, let's sign up, you know, let's support them financially through, you know, an event sponsorship. We have patients that sometimes, you know, aren't able to travel on respite. You know, let's figure out how we can help drive them, you know, to be, and now we're only going to Woodlock, which is in Holly, PA. So it's, you know, let's get them there. Because some people we have don't own cars. You know, everyone's situation is different. And now, you know, we have companies calling us, say, listen, I'd like to do some team building, right? So we do have companies that do cornhole for cancer. It's a great one. We come in and do everything. But I think what the most special part of that is that we have notes that, and we take little Polaroid pictures of the person, and they write a note to a cancer patient. And we put it in the rooms of patients when they go away. So they recognize that they're not alone.
And I think that's so awesome. And that's why I want to make sure you get the word out about how companies can get in touch with you and the benefits of doing team building like that. Because face it, every company now, especially with, you know, the past couple of years and the craziness and more people working from home and not in the office, now that we are starting to come back into the office, we need to bring that sense of unity again. And part of it is to remind people that, you know, there's other people going through struggles, and what can we do to help them instead of just, hey, everybody, we're having pizza in the lobby today. Like, no, what can we do to help others while, you know, building our team relations together?
Right. So that's exactly it. So that's what's great is for the cornhole, anyone can play, like, mm-hmm. you know, and it's fun. And, you know, it gives people a little break, right, mm-hmm. to spend time and be present. And, and that's what makes it really special. And then you write little notes. So we do strength strands for families. So there's a lot of like different pieces that we try to incorporate. And, you know, our long-term goal is really to own a respite center where volunteerism is going to be like a critical component of the success.
The experience you had, does that continue to inspire you every day for these ideas? Like just, you know, everybody needs to get away, even from the office, even if it's, but these, you know, this never leaves you when you're going through this type of situation. You know, that I'm sure it's always in the back of your mind, if not the front of your mind, and having these events and having the respites, you know, you can relate to it.
Right. Well, you lived it. So
you lived
when
it.
You lived it, you know, you see, you know, I can look back 23 years later and still recount that moment. Right.
I mean, that's what I was going to ask you. It's been
powerful.
23 years. And today when you were telling your story and you, you know, broke down a little bit, understandably, it just to Joe's point, how do you stay fresh to want to, like, yeah, that was 23 years ago, but fast forward, you're married now, you have two healthy children, and, you know, life is good, and but I can see in your eyes that you still are that woman 23 years ago, because you witness these families now, and you're not just hearing their story, but you lived it, so you really know how they feel and what they need, right?
Well, I always say the worst thing that happened was Pete died. The worst thing that happens now is people tell me, no, you know, I can't support you. So, you know, I think that I just look at the need and I know how much it helped me heal. Mm-hmm. And now we have to help other people heal. And there's so many people that need that healing, especially mm-hmm. today more than ever. So, you know, we have a great group of people behind For Pete's Sake, and we have a bold vision of really building the nation's first respite center. It is a huge undertaking.
But you're going to do it.
But we are going to do it.
You
know, and really, it could be a national program. I mean, I'm not, like, I don't.
Well, it's already in five states, right?
It is in five states, yep.
I mean, that's
Marcy, if someone, I know you said your focus is on younger, like, is there a certain age group? Like, do you only see folks that have cancer that are from this age to that? Or, like, what's your
guidelines? So we're at, like, 21 to 55. Mm-hmm. You know, just because we have a limited budget. Now, would mm-hmm. that change, you know? Like, that's ebbed and flowed, you know,
and then how about, like, if, you know, after the show today, I'm talking with someone and they tell me, you know, their story of their loved one who's in their 20s and going through everything that you're describing. What would I do then? Just pick up the phone or?
So you can, it's, you know, if people go to our website, probably mm-hmm. primarily first, although we do answer the phone too. Mm-hmm. I love it because I love having a uh-huh. real person answer the
and
phone.
And you answered it.
I did answer.
I was so impressed. I was like, it's Marcy.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, because you need someone, right? Yeah. The last thing you want to do is leave a message like, you are in crisis.
Yeah.
Cancer is crisis. Yeah.
Nothing's worse than a suicide hotline and it's a recording, right?
Absolutely.
You're in crisis. So, you know, when people, in order to get into our program, you have to be nominated by a member of your oncology team.
I was just going to say, how do you normally?
So that's how it really works because, you know, the last thing we want to do is have someone be all excited and not be able to go because of their own health because it changes so rapidly. So we really work with oncologists to you know, nominate the patients that they think are going to be able to do it. Now, if you knew someone, you could call our office, send us an inquiry through our website. We will give you our inquiry letters that they in turn can take to their oncologist.
Doctor, right?
And that opens the dialogue for them.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, because there has to be dialogue. Like, mm-hmm. These guys are, like, when you are going through cancer, your oncology team, like, it's like your lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are your lifeline,
yeah.
Right? And so you need them, they need you. And I think, you know, one benefit that, you know, of that kind of anecdotal that came out was that we have a patient program committee made up of all the nominators to our program, not all of them, but, like, you know, 10, a handful of nominators. And we review the program to make sure that we're meeting the needs of the patient. And, you know, we were sitting in a meeting and he said, you know, Marcy, you might not realize it, but when people come and walk back into my office after going on respite,
they've, like, improved.
You make me feel better as an oncologist.
Yeah.
You make my job easier. Like, I get inspiration from seeing them mm-hmm. smile because I haven't seen a smile
right.
on a day.
It brings energy.
And there's something said about that.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned, obviously, and I was reading that about the oncologist, you know, nominating. But the respite care is who is involved, the family, the patient.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
The
caregiver.
If someone came to you and was, you know, a good fit for the services you provide, obviously it's a cancer patient because you know that they definitely need a respite, but it is a family affair. So do they get, like, one guest that can come with them, or how does that
work?
So
we really say household. So because everyone has different living arrangements, but it's really, like, your core group, household group of people who are there with you. going through it.
And so, is there a certain stay? Like, is it a two-day stay?
So everything is pretty standard. It's a five-night stay, wow. So 6 days. So it's a week.
Who's with them? Somebody from your organization?
Do a facilitator. We have someone from organization, and now we actually are starting to incorporate this volunteer component. With the anticipation that, you know, once the respite center is complete, we'll be able to have a really robust volunteer program. You know, we see people go on mission trips. Like, this is a mission trip in your own backyard. That's, you know, I look at my 14-year-old daughter, and she'll never forget that moment, you know, of doing that. The most powerful moment she's had with seeing somebody, you know, going through an experience like this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our goal was really to build a really robust volunteer program that, you know, everyone's going to...
Are most of the volunteers individuals that have one way or another, even at the level that your daughter has experienced it because of being
touched, abreast
of this situation, but are most of the volunteers people that have been a part of a situation that impacted them?
Oh, yeah. I think everyone's kind of knows cancer and has lived through it and knows someone that they love with it. So, to Peggy's point, we offer a method to be able to give back, you know, and that's really beautiful.
What is a staycation?
So for people we've always done it. So when people get nominated to our program, sometimes they get too sick, right? They take a turn for the worse. So now instead of them going away on respite, we actually bring a lot of the psychosocial, emotional pieces to them. So a great example is like we do aromatherapy for them. We give them massage lotion. We have a whole thing on the gift of touch, the last sense to really leave, you know, when you're caring for someone. So a simple puzzle, making brownies and having a smell. Like, we want to create kind of moments that are in the house. And then we give them a little, you know, check too, just to do something special. You know, we had one family who went out and, you know, he was really sick and got a Christmas tree that was a live tree. Like, so just a lot of little pieces. So, you know, the staycation really kind of came out as just, it was kind of a byproduct. And then when with COVID, we were like, oh, wow, we really need, let's look at this as an entry into our program. So now you don't have to be nominated by a member of your oncology team for a staycation. Because there are, some result from our travel respite program into our staycation program just because of progression of health. But then there's some people who just come to us and it's time is of the essence. So we're able to move quicker with those.
And I'm just really glad to hear that you do touch not just a patient because, you know, one of my fellow Our Lady of Peace members had recently lost his wife and he has two children and of course himself. And I watched how it touched the family as well. And I think it's so important to know, and you can relate to this, 23 years ago, it wasn't Pete that was just going through it. You know, you were the wife that was seeing him through this. So, you know, even though you weren't the one that was ill, you needed to have and feel that support and love. And so I just think it's great that you include everyone because some programs, it's really focused on the patient, which, of course, we know is important. They're going through it. But it really is a family situation, a family disease.
Yeah, you want them to open up the dialogue about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you want them to have those quiet moments like that I had, but in turn, improve the communication about really let's talk about reality. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, so life is difficult, and then you get cancer, and when you're
then
so
you
young,
really know. Yeah.
Then you it's like a curveball. But you know, and I think what we recognize is that like it's like a game of chess. There's lots of players. There's lots of of moves. You can't control them.
But you know? Having that experience...
You're on the board together.
As a caregiver, as a loved one, it makes sense that everybody gets to be a part of it. Because, to re-energize, to revitalize the entire family who are all going through the experience together. Let's talk about the resources that the organization has. I was reading through it. You just provide all kinds of books, events, social media resources, gathering sports events. Talk about for Pete's sake, walk at Citizens Bank Park. I mean, some really cool stuff that you guys do.
Well, you know, I think we have some events that are very tailored to our families, you know, that go through our program. So we're having like a party in the park on October 23rd. We invite all the families that we helped. I mean, we have families driving in from Pittsburgh, you know, to meet another family that they met while they were on respite. So, and we have, you know, we do small mini breaks, like we'll get tickets to a concert or like, you know, so we do a lot of things that are very quiet for our families. Once you're in our community, it's like Hotel California, you can check in, but you can't check out,
right?
Like we're there for them. You know, we're there for them, you know, whether the person lives or doesn't survive, like we are going to be a community that supports them and that family unit.
That's what I was going to ask. So once, unfortunately, if the family member who, you know, originally we were trying to put in respite passes, is that support there for the family then thereafter?
Yes.
That's great.
Okay. So,
and you know what I wanted to make sure our listeners out there hear is, and I know some people are shaking their head like, oh, I'd love to help. It sounds like such a great organization, but I just don't have the time, which I hate when people say that. But, you know, there are a lot of ways. You just named them. Like if you're a company out there and you have those tickets, I guarantee somebody listening today maybe has Phillies or Eagles tickets and five of them got wasted last night or the night before. Call and say, you know, hey, Marcy, I have some tickets. I'd love to offer them.
We have a whole process
if
that
you happen
we
to
have
some extra cash. A donation's always great. But, you know, I think people forget. Or if you're maybe somebody at home who makes lap blankets. Like, I don't know about you, but blankets always feel comforting to me. So I'm sure to a cancer patient, having one on your lap when you're going for your chemo, knowing that someone took the time to make that with a little love for you would make a difference. Sit home and knit some blankets. Like, there's so many ways people can help, and I hope everybody's listening to that. And then even if they don't have the time, maybe they have the resources and the money and the extra tickets or some way to help.
Well, we were laughing because, you know, one thing is like monthly donors are really important, especially in order, like when you're spending more and more cash, you know, to help families. Having like, you know, consistent cash flow is important in a business. And so for as little as $5 a month, I always say to people, it's a cup of coffee. Like you can make our mission possible for someone who and like that
oh,
is
I'm
the
signing
gift.
Up.
So
see,
it's,
I mean,
you know,
and it would be a great feeling.
Where can people find out about
that website? Just takeabreakfromcancer.org and you'll see like Mission Possible. Every month we feature a family and you can sign up and be a monthly donor
now
for
$5. Because we don't want people to get confused. For Pete's sake is the organization.
Oh, yeah. Takeabreakfromcancer.org.
Takeabreakfromcancer.org. Go to that site and that's where you can find all the ways that you can help pay it forward.
Yes. It's really simple. So we were laughing with one of my board members because we were talking about our budget in 9 years, like once we bring on a respite center. Our goal is to help thousands of people annually. You know, I said, oh, we only need 16,123 monthly donors at $25 each. So we were laughing because, you know, you start figuring it out. And,
how many families would you say you help through a year?
It's probably about a couple hundred. Like, you know, I mean, it's a little less than COVID right now because we're really focusing on long-term and in 2 years build, you know, we as an organization are committed to building the nation's first respite center for families. So we're putting a lot of energy into that.
Where would you want it to be?
We identified a piece of land up at Woodlock in the Woodlock community. I don't know if you've been up there in Holly. It's about 32 acres. And you know, our goal is that when you arrive at that center, you can exhale.
What type? I mean, this might be a direct question, but what type of funds would it take to do that?
It's a lot. $17 million total. So we are really like working towards fundraising towards that goal. But you know, as Peggy said,
come
earlier,
on, there's some listener
we
out
will
there
do
that
it.
Has some.
We will do it. You know, it's a bold vision. It's a bold vision. And you know what? It was Pete's vision in the very beginning. Like, here we are, you know, he had this whole vision of bringing families together in a center. And then we took a very circuitous route where we helped 10,000 people, which is beautiful. And now we're going back to that, you know, original vision.
What does Take Five pledge?
So we actually, that's a great question. So we have that for our families. So anyone who goes through our program, we ask them to consider this Take Five pledge. You know, it's take 5 minutes to make a phone call to someone else who's in need, right? To think of, you know, because that take 5 minutes to write about For Pete's Sake and the impact we've met. Take $5 and donate it. You know, I mean, that's, you know, put something into action. So, you know, take five to journal and to like exhale yourself. Like take 5 minutes to reflect on where you are, like that stillness. So we've really, you know, put this, made this part of our cultural mantra about, you know, not only giving it, but also living it.
Can I mention one more thing? Because I know we only have 1 minute, so I'll talk fast. But, you know, the holidays are coming. And I don't know about you, but being in an office situation, we're that company that, like, everybody buys each other little gifts, little tchotchkes, whatever. Instead, how about more companies out there just instead, whether it's $5, $10, put the money together and donate it too, for Pete's sake.
Right. They
Wouldn't
could
that
do
be
that.
Great?
That'd be fantastic. And they can actually call us and maybe even adopt a family because we, you know, so, I mean, we do that quietly. Yeah. Here we are talking about it on radio, but it's quiet, but it's not so quiet.
But, so Marcy, somebody wants to donate, somebody wants to host an event, you know, become a volunteer. Where can they do that again?
TakeABreakFromCancer.org, or just call our office and talk to us.
What's the phone? You got a phone number?
267-708-0510.
Awesome. Peggy, last parting words
is wanted to thank John Givnish and Chris and Dan Selecki for giving us the opportunity to meet like-minded people. And if you need our help in any way, whether it's pre-planning or a family member has passed, 1-800-GIVNISH or 1-800-448-6474. My name's Peggy Jansen. I'm proud to be a part of the team.
Awesome. Listen, I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Givnish Spotlight Hour. We want to thank John Givnish for making it all happen and the whole Givnish team, Dan Selecki, and of course, Peggy Chris. Jansen. And of course, we want to thank
Marcy,
our guest, Marcy Shankweiler, who is the founder and CEO of For Pete's Sake Cancer Respite Foundation. Marcy, continued incredible work that you're doing. This is incredibly impactful, and I want to get you on a couple more shows and see what we can do about helping in any way we can to make that facility happen.
Thank you. And to the Givnish family, I mean, they really are a family. Who cares? John, Jerry, you know, I've witnessed it for 20 plus years, and I'm lucky to call them, you know, part of our community.
Awesome. On those words, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Givnish Spotlight Hour on WWDB Talk 860. On behalf of Peggy, on behalf of John Givnish, and of course on behalf of Marcy Shankweiler of For Pete's Sake Cancer Respite Foundation, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.